Welcome to TA1. Everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, the legendary Randy Erickson. And Merry Christmas if you're listening to this before Christmas. Or Merry Christmas a long ways away if you're listening to it after Christmas. Jimmy's here, so we'll keep this short because she's very annoying. Yes, you are. It's Christmas, right? So this be the Christmas episode because it's almost Christmas. We're not talking Santa Claus or anything like that. But, Merry Christmas. Go fast. Take chances. Let's knock wood that 2021 is going to be better for all of us. We can all get to hang out. That would really be wonderful. So, yeah, that's it. Enjoy. Hey, if you want to send me something for Christmas, I'm fine if it's a little late. Anyway, bye. Thank you. Thanks everybody for listening and people that have said they enjoy the show. So we will see you next year.
Hello.
Lewis, is that you?
Randy, how are you?
I'm doing good, although I got a dog that's got a little bit of a upset belly, I think, but she's settled down now.
What did you feed her, man?
That's a good question, because she's kind of not been eating the last few days very much. Just a little bit of her organic grass-fed beef, because that's what she gets.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nice. I don't know what it is, but she's all curled up at my feet right now, so I think we're good.
Oh, man, I hope she feels better.
Yeah, I think she is right now because she's curled up and sleeping and having a good time. So
nice. And you're home right now, right?
I'm
back in the States. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I said we're home. We're enjoying some actually pretty nice weather, so getting some outside work done before, because I know things are going to go bad, but right now we're good.
Yeah, we got hammered here in New Jersey last night, but it was fun. You know, the snow, girl sledding, and I got some fat biking done today. So, but it was interesting to, you know, last week I was in Ecuador, 75 degrees. Sunny, nice and warm, and we're like at 20 degrees with snow like up to my knees. Wow. That's cool.
I mean that's a kind of tough. I think I'm trying to think of any. I don't think I've come back from anywhere at that much of a change. Usually the bad weather comes when I'm out of town, you know. Australia, Paula gets a foot of snow and she has to deal with it. So,
Are you going to stay home throughout the holidays or are you going somewhere?
Yep. No, we're here. It's, her sister and brother in Chicago, but that's fine. My mom's here in Rapid. So it's just the three of us and we are going to have spaghetti and meatballs this year.
Nice.
For Christmas.
Nice.
I think we started a couple years ago. It's like, why do you have to have the traditional Christmas? You know, turkey and ham and all that stuff. So I think last year we had chili. I think the year before we had Mexican food.
Yeah, just like us, we have a weird way of celebrating Christmas because. My daughter's birthday is on the 25th too. So, you know, like nothing's open on the 25th. So we typically just have Chinese food or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's enough going on at Christmas that you don't have to, you know, why spend all morning in the kitchen and stuff. And, you know, we kind of do Thanksgiving pretty traditional, except we don't get a big turkey, but I'm good with that being traditional.
Yeah, as long as you get some time, you know, with the family and stuff, that's good.
Pretty much it, yeah. And since it's really just the three of us. Yeah, it's almost just another day, but not quite, because you get cool things. So you're in New Jersey now?
I'm in Jersey now. Yeah, I've been here for about a year and a little bit more.
So is that work that moved you?
Yeah, work. You know, you got to follow the work. So the company that I work for got bought by a bigger company, so I had to move to New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. That never happens very often, huh?
No.
Well, you'll have to get hooked up with Brian and that crew in Jersey. Have you been doing anything with, well, obviously not this year, but yeah.
Well, I see that with them. No, I mean, I think we exchanged a few emails or texts or something like that, but they're a little bit farther away from me.
Okay.
So, you know, I know they go on their little pack rafting adventures, which are awesome, but we haven't had a chance to connect. Hopefully next year.
Yeah. Yeah. This year's a little, let's just get it over with.
Yeah, I know. And I do want to do more racing here in the U.S. You know, I want to see if I, you know, either hook up with a team or something. I want to race more here.
Well, and quite honestly, you're probably in a better area for that than you were in Chicago.
It seems like there's a lot more. Yeah, man, this place is, you know, New Jersey gets a bad rep. Like, there's so much stuff to do here. Good mountain biking, good pack rafting, you know, good running. You're close to the beach. New Jersey really does get a bad rep. And I'm up in the mountains. It's been cool. I actually like it a lot more than Chicago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I obviously give a lot of grief to New Jersey, but I was giving a lot of grief to Florida until I'd been here a half a dozen times and watched the races. And it's like, it's hard down here. And so, but
yeah.
So, okay. Can I make my New Jersey joke?
Go.
Have you seen the Russian while you've been running around in the woods?
The Russian?
The Russian from The Sopranos?
No, but I will tell you, I have seen the strip club that Tony used to own. I haven't been there. I just passed by it. The Bada Bing?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I took a picture outside of Tony Soprano's house. I'm a big fan of The Sopranos. I love that series. I think I've watched it twice or three times. So I had to, I went to the house that they filmed it in, and one day we were coming home from the airport, and I saw the Bada Bing, and we stopped there. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is Tony Soprano's strip club. So I haven't seen The Russian, but I've seen his strip club.
So I wonder if they have Soprano tours, you know, in Albuquerque. They have Breaking Bad tours that you can take. So.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. It takes you around to all the places. So. Yeah. Well, here's good training. You just find all those places and put them on the map, and then you just go ride your bike one day and hit them all.
There you go. That would be fantastic training. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's probably going to be a long transition area at the strip club, but, you know, it would be good training.
I didn't say it was going to be easy. So, but, okay, adventure racing. I guess we got to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking you're the first adventure racer that's done a race that I've talked to that's doing a race report in a year.
Probably.
Because everybody this year was all, you know, Eco Challenge stuff. And that was 14 months ago. So not to put any pressure on you, but you better be good so I keep my listeners.
Yeah, I have some good stories.
Okay, that's what we want to know. So, first question. How hard was it to get there?
Honestly, it wasn't that hard. It wasn't that hard, Randy. I think, you know, like the airlines are taking a lot of precautions. It wasn't that hard. And I will tell you, particularly in Ecuador, they're managing this whole COVID situation a lot more stricter than here in the U.S. Like everywhere you go, there's like people measuring your temperature. They have these things where you just, like if you go to the mall, you just walk through these things and they like shower you with something. So they're taking it very strict, and to get into the country, you need to have the COVID test and everything. So, you know, they're managing a lot better than what I thought they were, but it wasn't harder out to get there.
Okay. I've flown once through all this, and it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have anybody sitting beside you, and it was mellow, and people seem to care about other people a little bit. Mm-hmm. So,
The only thing I missed was the airplane food. They don't give you food on the airplanes anymore. So our connection in Miami was a little bit short, and we were just starving. We were getting twice over.
That's the one thing. You better really bring your food with you, because I think Minneapolis, you know, some places were open when you went through, but so who did you race with?
So I raced with I've been racing with the same guys for about almost 8 years. These are the guys, you know, that I started racing with in Ecuador, with the exception of the girl. The girl that you know, that used to race with us, she couldn't make it this time. She was packed, jammed with work. So we actually imported someone from Colombia. Her name is Jamie Cadena. She actually won White Asinchi in Colombia with Colombia Vidaray, with Woodsy and the team. So very strong racer. You know, she's super cool. I mean, so fun to you know, to race with. So that was my team this time. And it was, you know, the race was, I would say, it was a little bit brutal. I don't know if you saw the reports, but we were, you know, we were super high throughout the race. We started high, and then we even went up higher. And, you know, our idea was to complete the course. The thing in Ecuador right now, I don't know if you know, Randy, but the level of racers down there has gone significantly up. There's so many people into adventure racing now. My team and I, we were probably one of the first teams to start adventure racing back, almost 15 years ago. You know, and typically it was always the same people, the same folks in every single race. But now it's like, it's grown massively. Like, you know, you have so many young teams, strong competitors in both categories, and the elite and on the adventure category. So many strong racers, good navigators. I was really, really surprised.
Well, which begs the question, why? Where did they all come from?
Well, the thing is that, you know, the guys that put on this race, which is Proyecto Aventura, so White Asinchi right now is the longest organized AR race in the world. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
So this would be like, I think it's like the 18th year that you know, it's been continuous and that they've been putting on these races. So, you know, they're pretty buttoned up. They organize these races really well. And in addition to like adventure races, they do other type of races like mountain bike races and like trail run races. And you know, they've done a really nice job of involving families and really bringing the adventure community together. So I think, you know, it's been catching up, and you have a lot more people in the sport right now than ever before. They even had to, like, because of COVID, they had over 100 entries to White Asinchi, and they had to like say, hey guys, you know, we can't have all these teams because it's just too many people. So it's really, really grown, and it's become a massive, massive, you know, sport that's growing significantly down there, which is really cool.
Yeah. So it wasn't just the Eco Challenge bump. They've been building this for years.
Yeah. And it's going to keep growing. I can tell you that.
So what level of competition is the, let's say, average Ecuadorian team? I mean, how good are they compared to, I don't know, the rest of the world? And how good are they going to get?
Well, right now, you have a couple of people there that are in the top 10 in the circuit, right? So you have, you know, Terraventura, which are the young guns. I actually, I know those kids. They started racing when they were 11 years old. And man, they're like the navigator there, Felipe, he's a beast. Like he, in this particular race, they even congratulated because his navigation was 100% accurate. It was incredible. So, then you have Movistar. I mean, they're starting to catch up again. You have guys like, Martin Sainz, who's been doing this forever. And he raced with Jerry Hyatt, who's a very strong racer too. You have Life Adventure Team, which they're a very, very strong team as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of months or years, you're going to start seeing some of those teams get up in the ranking because one, they're getting very strong. They're training all the time. And as you know, Randy, you've been in Ecuador, man, Ecuador is like the New Zealand of South America, right? Yeah. It couldn't be a better training ground for adventure racing than anywhere else in the world. And these guys are getting tougher and tougher every single day. So I wouldn't be surprised that if in the next year or so, you're going to start seeing some of these teams creep up into the rankings and new teams come in as well. Because the other thing that they're able to do down there that is really hard in other places, I believe, is they can get the funding from companies there. So you have Movistar and all these local companies that are very supportive of these sports. So Movistar in Ecuador, their whole marketing campaign is around, the Movistar adventure team. And so these guys are like rock stars down there. So everywhere they go, I mean, the only thing that's missing is that they probably need to sign autographs or something like that. But my friend Martin, he actually got me into the sport. Like you can't go anywhere with him because everybody in freaking town knows the guy. So I wouldn't be surprised, like I said, that in the next couple of months or years or so, you're going to see some of these teams really creep up into the rankings.
That's pretty cool or scary, depending on if you're a racer or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling them that, they have a lot of benefits that other racers and other teams aren't, which is one is training and altitude, right? They're always up high and like training hard high and then recovering low, whatever that is. But I was like, who's making more effort? You guys who are here all the time or the other guys that are not here all the time and are, working their butt off just to finish the race. But I think you're going to see some of those teams really creep up into the rankings.
Cool. Is the scene, if they're getting that competitive, is it competitive or are they, do people train together, different teams, or is it getting a little cutthroat?
I think it's really getting competitive because you have guys in there that, in addition to adventure racing, you have guys there that have finished fifth place at Mont Blanc, right? Mm. Or you have Martin who won that 100-mile trail race in Japan, right? So it's really getting competitive, not only there, but and they don't train together. I mean, there's a lot of competition internally as well. Like, the young guns, Terraventura, and like some of the other teams, like, it's not like they train together. They're very competitive within each other. And, you hear the stories from them. Because, typically my team and I were in the middle or the back. So, but these guys, you hear the stories that, that happens at the front line. And it's like, oh, my gosh, they're there like to kind of kill each other and just push themselves like, to death.
Wow. They're going. I mean, that's how you get better, though, right? You got to have somebody to push you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, okay, so some adventure racers are rock stars. What? I mean, I'm going to make an assumption that football is the biggest sport in Ecuador. What else is adventure racing, going against for eyeballs and sponsorship and things like that in Ecuador? Mm. What other sports are there?
Well, yeah, soccer. You know, soccer is the biggest sport down there. And but adventure sports are getting more noticed. We were for I don't know if you remember, Randy, when you were down there in the World Championships in 2014. The girl that raced with us, with my team, she actually became the minister of sports in Ecuador. Wow. But it was after the race, unfortunately. So I think she was the minister there for a couple of years. So she really did a nice job of, bringing up to the government and things like that. There's more things than soccer, right? Mm-hmm. There was a little bit more funding towards adventure sports and outdoors and even like cycling. I don't know if you've seen, but there's some Ecuadorian guys that, like Richard Carapaz, who won the Tour of Italy, and last year and did fantastic at the Tour of France right now. So, people are getting noticed. They're getting a little bit more support than before. And that's good for everyone, right? So I think you're going to, people around the world are going to start seeing more things, more Ecuadorians coming and breaking through different sports, and particularly adventure or, endurance sports.
Yeah. Well, they were a force to be reckoned with in a multitude of ways. So, so did you know that this is all kind of going on before you got to the race, or did you get to the race and like somebody said go and you're like, where are all those fast racers going?
No. Well, we each have our own plan. So initially this race was going to be in June, right? And one of the reasons that I ended up going was because, my team and I, we do want to go to Worlds next year in Spain. We want to get the points and everything. I think as time progressed, they had to readjust the route because of COVID. And, they wanted us to stay away from like towns and things like that. So they had to readjust the route. Which we were like, okay, so this is, they're probably going to send us to these places that are way out there, very high, very remote and things like that, which made it more special. I think in this particular one, I think they went a little bit, they were a little bit extreme in some cases, but the payout was amazing. Like, I've traveled around. So this is my 11th Guayrasinchi. I always go down there because it's just not because it's my country, but I do believe that this particular race, you really, it's what adventure racing is all about. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I've done races here in the U.S. I've done some races in Europe and things like that. But this is one where you really feel like, this is like this is why I'm in this thing, right? Because you feel the pain, you have the different disciplines, and it's like a truly, truly, truly adventure race, as some of the other folks might say as well, who have been able to go down there. The only thing I knew going in was that it was going to be high and that I was going to be throwing up every half an hour or something.
So where basically was the race, location generally?
Yeah, so it started around Cotopaxi. So Cotopaxi, as you probably know, is the highest volcano in the world, like from an altitude perspective. It was a run in that area, so it was kind of loopish, right? So you started in this place, which is called Porvenir, which is in the skirts of the volcano, and then you had to loop. It was only four legs, so you had two trekking legs and two bike legs. It was initially going to be 3-3, but the weather was, when they were setting up the race, it was terrible, and And you know, they thought that nobody was going to finish because it was that bad. So they eliminated the kayak leg. So you had, you know, trekking, biking, and then a really cool rappel. So it started around Cotopaxi, and then, you know, you did kind of a loop around this neighboring mountain, which is called Sincholagua, which is about 16 feet above sea level, which is also high. Yeah. You had a nice long trek there, then a very long bike leg, then another long, very technical trek, and then a super, super long bike leg that took you back to the starting line. So, I mean, we were fortunate enough that the weather held in. I took every possible gear that I could take for cold weather and rain. And, you know, it rained. It didn't rain a lot, but it was a very fast race. So it was, you know, it was very fast. You went very fast. You went up a lot. You went down a lot. I mean, and that's kind of what, you know, what happened to our teammate that, you know, she wasn't used to walking on this. I don't know if you remember from Worlds back then, but you have this, you know, they call it the ambient tundra, right? And it's, I would say that's a sport by itself. Walking in that thing, it's like, it's really, really, it's a skill.
So is that kind of like it's like the, what do they call it? I don't remember what they call it in Patagonia, but it's kind of softish and you're just not ever sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, part of it is that, and the other part is like, yeah. I call it like this Andean sawgrass. So, you know, you've seen the sawgrasses at the C2C adventure race, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So think of those, but up in 16,000 feet and like, you know, up to your head in height. So you're walking in those, you know, and it's hard, and, you know, your knees can get busted. So it's a skill by itself. So, you know, I think that kind of favors the local teams because, you know, they're training in those areas and stuff like that. But yeah, it was tough and some people took a really, really good beating there.
Yeah. So, okay. I want to hear all about your race, but you bring up an interesting question. How big of an advantage is it in specifically in Ecuador for the local teams versus like a team coming from Europe or the United States?
Yeah. So I would say for this particular one, Randy, I think it did favor some of the local teams because, you know, that's an area that where people train, not all of it, but some of those areas. But they've done an effort, like last year, for instance, when Colombia won, you know, Colombia Vidaray, you know, we were in an area that I don't think anybody had been there before. But for this one in particular, I think there were, and it even favored my team in some places because, there were places that, for instance, my teammates had been biking there a couple of weeks ago. So the nav in that particular segment was pretty easy. But in this one, I think it did favor some of the locals a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, locals always. I mean, that's, you know, locals rule, yeah. Right?
Yeah, but last year it was like for me at least, last year's why the CNC was probably one of the best races that I've ever done. It was like amazing, like the route, the oh my gosh, it was incredible. I mean, you can talk to Urti and some of those guys about it. It was like I was in awe, and I was in places in my own country that I didn't even know they existed.
Yeah, isn't that cool? You're like,
yeah,
really? Where did this come from?
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. It was amazing. I mean, I still have vivid dreams about that race.
That's I think that might be the sign of a good race if you're still thinking about it.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was incredible.
So actually, thinking about races, Mark Harris and I got into this last week. Do you remember like specific areas of most of your races? And can you kind of go in your mind and say, okay, you know, this year we did these stages and we went to this place, and that, Or yeah. Do they all kind of roll together?
I think I have highlights from most of my races, and you know, I can tell you about a few here in the U.S. and others in Ecuador and some other places. But yeah, like I have highlights. You know, I can tell you one. I did a few years ago. I think it was Jason Magnus' first Oregon race, or first or second one. And he put this checkpoint, and that was actually, you know, Steve from Ben Racing. I think that was Steve's first race, and we were racing together. And Jason put a checkpoint in the, you know, in the map. It said it was a lake. And man, we were there like hours and hours, and we were, you know, we were in the right place. Yeah. And you know, and it took us for I don't even remember if we found it or not, because we were just so exhausted. But then he said, "Hey guys, didn't you think that the lake could have dried up?" And it was a dry lake. And I'm like, "Oh my god, it drove me crazy." So that's one highlight. The other one was at C2C. What was it? 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. There was a checkpoint in the middle of a lake that was infested by crocodiles. And we got there super late. Yeah, we got there super late, and I just had my headlamp on, and I saw all those eyes, and my friend and I were like, oh my, okay, we're going to die, man. And, you know, if we're going to die, let's die together, let's swim to the checkpoint. Yeah, and I have a picture there, and you can see all the eyes there. It's insane. Yeah, so, you know, you have your highlights from some of these races, and I think, you know, probably the other one was at Worlds in Wyoming. Where, you know, I think we got lost with one of the teams there for like 9 hours. And then, you know, everybody was like, oh my gosh, these guys are so resilient, going up and down the same place for like 9 hours. And we finally got out. Yeah. I mean, that race was amazing for me. One of my favorite races too.
Do you, and in kind of the same vein, and I've talked to some other people about this, I don't ever know on the podcast, but do you, here's what I do. I will just be sitting or doing something, and I will get almost a vision of some place in a race. You know, like we're traveling from one CP to another, and actually this was in Ecuador, and I can still, groves of trees, and I can still see it like I'm right there. So do you ever get that where all of a sudden you're like almost back at a race?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think that happens to most of the racers, you know, those are the stories that you usually tell. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it happens to me a lot. Yeah. You know, sometimes I'm working and, like this week, you know, I got back to the States and I started catching up on work and stuff like that. And, you know, I think it was just the sleep deprivation that was probably getting to me, but, you know, it just takes you back. And I don't know if it happens to you, but you even smell things like, oh my gosh, I remember that smell in that particular, part of the race.
Oh, see, that doesn't happen to me, but I have I have a very poor sense of smell. So I don't really notice smells, you know, anywhere. So, although I love the smell of baking bread, I do smell that. But, yeah, I don't. My sense of smell is pretty weak. So, but that would be cool to, you know, smell something and be taken back to an event.
Yeah, or you know, I think. I don't know if it happens to you, like when you come back home and, you know, you typically forget to take your gear out of your bag and you leave it there for like a couple of weeks and then you open it up and like, oh, okay, I remember that smell.
Yeah, there is that part. I'm pretty good about doing that though, because like when I get home, I need to, you know, I'm, you know, doing more photos or videos, so I got to get all that gear out, and as long as I'm getting all that gear out, so it'll come out of the bag, but it may sit on the floor for quite a while. But I can see, yeah, like a bike box. Yeah, I don't want to deal with that right now. We'll work on it later. So, all right. So tell me about the race. Tell me about your race, how it went.
Okay. So for me, this race had a kind of a special feeling to it. Personally, my family and I, we've been going through a few situations with one of my daughters. She has a kind of a condition, and you know, she's really fighting through it right now. So you know, it got a little bit worse during this year. So I was really thinking about, should I go? You know, is my head in the right place to go and race and stuff like that? But then I saw my girl and you know, how she's fighting through this. And I'm like, no, I got to show her that I can do this too. So she actually went with us to the race. So this one in particular had a very special place for me, and I really wanted to finish it and go and just, you know, put this whole situation kind of behind us and this whole year behind us. So I really wanted to finish this one. But, you know, this was supposed to happen in June and July, and then it got moved and everything. You know, the intention for my team was to finish the course. So if you talk to the guys at White Asinchi, the guy that put this race together, they tell everyone, look, this is a race that not everyone's going to finish. And it's not meant for everyone to finish. So last year, for instance, only one team completed the entire course. Which you're like, oh my God, you know, like, is it even worth it if you're not going to complete it? But you know going in that the likelihood of you completing the course is actually very low. So in our case, you know, my team and I, we've been training hard. We're like, look, even if we cross the finish line at the end, like kind of we always do, we want to do it. And we brought this girl in from Colombia, so we were in a good place. We started the race, spirits high and everything. High was everything because it was very high. and we're like, you know, we can do this. We can finish this race. We were doing pretty well. No nav mistakes. The altitude got to me a little bit at the beginning, but then I was just pushing through. I was kind of proud of myself because typically I really struggle with altitude, but in this particular time, I think I was doing okay. You know, I wasn't feeling my best, but I was doing okay. I was pushing through and, you know, the first trek was fast and technical and the nav was tough, but we got through it. So initially we thought that we were going to do around 20 hours for the first trek. We ended up doing it in 13. The weather helped a lot. So this trek, the first trek had the rope section in there. And so you had to carry all your gear and stuff like that and just go up, 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 up. And then, you know, you were high in the mountains. We saw some snow up there, really, you know, kind of sandy, rocky, volcanic terrain. So, you know, you have all that really thick sand up to your knees, which is really cool. But the sceneries, Randy, were amazing. Like, oh my gosh, some of these mountains. And you're in the middle of the Ecuadorian volcanic chain. So you saw all these amazing mountains and the weather was incredible. So that really paid out. So our female team member, she started getting some nags on her knee as we were going down to the transition area. She was doing okay, you know, kind of slowing up, you know, kind of slow. So it slowed us down a bit, but she was doing fine. We got to the transition area. We transitioned quickly and, so it took us around 13 hours to finish that first trek. And then we were off to the bikes at night. Did really well on the bikes, very technical nav on the bike. There were about half of the teams that were lost on that bike. Like, so you had some of these super top competitive teams. They were lost there for like 7-8 hours. And fortunately, one of my team members had done a similar route a few months ago. So we actually stayed a couple of teams there that they started following us because, you know, my friend, my teammate knew the route. And, you know, we got to the transition area. And this was in the back of Cotopaxi, which is in an amazing area called El Tambo, very high up. And, you know, some of the top teams were with us there. So we were doing great. Then after that, you had a very technical trek that took you to the highest point of the race. So when we got there, you know, some of the top teams were saying, look, it's probably going to be like 10, 11 hours out there. And we're like, okay, yeah, for us, it's going to be like 20. So we took a little nap there. And then, you know, the sun came up and we started trekking. We started that second trek. And it was up. It was up. And the girl started to feel her knee. You know, she was like kind of limping and things like that. So we got to the first checkpoint up there, and then you had to go down again, and she was really struggling. So she showed me her knee, and her knee was like the size of her thigh.
Wow.
It was really inflamed. And you're talking about, you know, she's an athlete. She's someone that's been doing this for a while. She's won this race before. So, you know, I'm like, crap, what do we do? And I didn't want to make the decision. Like, all right, guys, you know, I think, you know, we can tape it up, pop some pills in there and just keep going. But I'm just going to go to the bathroom and let you guys make the decision. And then because I didn't want to drop out. I was feeling good. I think, you know, I really wanted to finish the race. But the team, you know, I think it was the best interest to just go back to the TA and see how her knee was. And yeah, the guys there, the medics there, they said, look, like she can't go on. Yeah. You know, it was pretty bad. So that's where our race ended. But you know, we did a little bit more than half. I was a little bit disappointed. But then, you know, we saw some of the top teams come into the transition because it was a loop. And they were coming in, and man, you saw somebody like that trek was brutal. It was brutal, brutal, brutal. Like, so we're like, okay, kind of got saved from that one, but but yeah, you know, you have that itch in you that you're like, oh man, I could have done it. So, you know, sometimes yeah. That's how it is.
Well, it is. I mean, it happens, but do you, I mean, obviously you made the right decision because, you know, it sounds like you might have got out there and not got back. I mean, you'd gotten back, but so do you feel a little better when you realize that this would have been so miserable and almost dangerous if we'd have gone? Does it make it a little bit easier that you had to pull the plug?
I don't know. That's the thing with these races, right? Yeah. It's tough because when you're there at that moment and you're tired and this is actually the second time we make these type of decisions, and I'm like, damn, if we could have just, like, you know, probably rested a little bit and then made a decision.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
well, there's always that. But, yeah, you know, that's heat of the moment.
Yeah, it's tough. And then, you know, after the race finished, a couple of days after, I think it was, you know, 2 or 3 days after the race, man, my teammates and I, we were like, crap, we should have just kept going, even if it took us like 40 hours to finish that trek. But, you know, I think obviously we made the right decision for her, right? We didn't want to go, we didn't want to injure her more. And I think if probably we would have kept going, they would have had to rescue us, and the area that we were going in, it would have taken them at least a day to get in there and help us out. So it was the right decision from, you know, from a medical standpoint. From an ego standpoint, totally wrong decision.
Yeah. But okay, let's say 6 months from now, I'm going to ask you to predict the future. Do you think you will look at that and say, yes, we made the right decision?
Oh, of course. No, and we did because, you know, I think she went back to Colombia and the doctor told her that, you know, if she wouldn't have made that decision, she probably couldn't, you know, run or race for at least a couple of months. So it was the right decision. It was the right decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a small comfort, but it's a little comfort.
Yeah.
So you talk about technical navigation. How is it technical? Is it tons of trails? Is there no trails? Is it bad maps? What makes it so technical?
The guys that put these races together, so I was talking to them, and they're kind of close friends of mine. You know, I've talked to a few RDs here, and they, like, you know, like Jason and Mark, they have their strategies as they're putting these races together. These guys, they're like, you know, look, that looks like a nice hilltop that racers can go to. Let's see how they can get there. And it's like, you know, they just find nice places where they want to, you know, they want the payout of the scenery and things like that. So it makes the navigation very technical because the maps are a little bit updated, and there's a lot of parts where they plot and they're not, you know, and it's complicated. The other thing is that, you know, in the Andes, the weather is a science experiment. So there's places where, you know, you'll have sun for like 2 hours and then it starts hailing and then it starts getting foggy. And you know, it gets really, really tricky. But yeah, there's a lot of trails that are not on the maps. There's a, you know, certain altitude lines that are, you know, they don't tie up to the altimeters and things like that. So it is quite tricky to navigate there. And then I don't know if you recall from last year's race where the top teams got lost, you know, there's places that have a lot of minerals and the compasses just go crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah. So last year, yeah, there were a couple of top teams, including the Estonian ace. They got totally lost, and those guys are good at nav. They went completely the other way, like completely the other way, and they had to drop out.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. That's a, yeah, you don't plan on your compass not working.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah. It was crazy. You had, in some areas, Randy, we usually take three compasses. So you had three compasses saying different things. What do you do then?
The toughest guy gets to make the decision.
Yeah.
So when you go down there, can you kind of, since you've done enough of their races, do you have a feel for what the race director wants you to do?
Does that, you know, I thought I did, but I know what you're saying. I thought I did, but I don't. They, you know, these guys do such a nice job of putting these races together and giving racers a great experience. They're really good at it. And even though I know some of these folks, I grew up with some of them, it's like they always surprise me. So, yeah, I mean, I wish I could say yes, but no.
Yeah, just when you think you know what they might want you to do, they're going to.
Yeah, there's been times where I'm like, oh, I think, I've talked to them. I think I know where the race is. And then it's like completely 100% different.
Wow. So, well, I mean, that's why would you want to go do the same thing every time?
Yeah.
So, okay, 2021. Let's pretend that the world's going to be halfway normal. So, you already said you're thinking you want to go to Worlds. What else is on your schedule for next year?
I'm planning on doing C2C if we get some sponsorship help for my team to come up. And if not, like I said, I do want to race a little bit more here in the U.S. I just haven't found a team here. I want to see if I can, you know, either, race with someone or start training someone or something like that. I want to do more races here. So C2C is in my plan. Then most likely if Guayrasinchi happens in June, I want to get my revenge and go back.
Okay. Yep.
Worlds, and then I have a couple of trail races that I've signed up to, like 100 milers, you know, 100Ks and things like that. So that's in my plan right now.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think knock wood. I'm pretty sure C2C will be okay. I think traveling in the U.S. might be we'll be able to do it. I'm going to be curious to see what going overseas is like, if they'll let us in.
No, actually, I, you know, if I can say something, it was, it was actually a great time to travel. Yeah. We don't have a lot of people at the airport. They didn't charge me for my bike and my gear. At least for folks that like to do this, and if you're careful, as long as you're not touching anything,
yeah.
Man, those planes smell like hospitals.
Yep. Yeah, you keep your mask on, and I'm not afraid to fly. I'm an American.
What's in your plan?
Well, let's see.
What's on your plan? What's on your bucket list this year?
Cauldron in January, C2C, Expedition Oregon, Shenandoah Tough, Fire and Ice in Iceland.
Nice.
Maybe Worlds. They want me, so we'll see about Worlds.
Everybody wants you, Randy. Everybody wants you.
Yeah. Couple of motorcycle things might be kind of cool get to do, and so my goal, and as of now, my goal is to go to a race, at least one race every month, and right now that's happening. So yeah,
nice.
I think, you know, I'm like everybody else. I got to do two races, three if you count virtual nationals, and it's like I was supposed to do a lot of cool things last year, so I guess I'll do it this year, next year.
This vaccine thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm ready. Give me my shot. I hate shots. I'll be first in line.
So, I'm hoping that things go back to normal and, you know, get to see some of the adventure racing family here in the U.S. and in other places. My daughter got to experience, she's older now, so she got to experience this, this community, and she was like, oh my gosh, dad, she never noticed before because she was small. And now she's all hyped up because she saw Chelsea doing the Spartan Games, and now she wants to do a Spartan game. So, it's really cool. I wish more kids and more families would get into it because it's amazing.
Yeah. So how old is your daughter?
She's turning 16.
Oh, wow. She's probably twice Chelsea's size now. I've been watching the Spartan game things, and it's just like, oh man, Chelsea, you're like a third of the size of all those other women.
She should take the prize just for that. I mean, oh my gosh, those people are, oh my God, amazing. And I didn't even know it. I didn't even know Ryan Atkins. I didn't even notice that he was at the Eco Challenge. He was with the Canadians, and they got second place.
And then a couple of the others have been racing. They raced the Bear. I can't remember all the names, but I think they're trying to come this way. But no, I gotta say, watching Chelsea do that, whatever they call it, with where they gotta use a sledgehammer on the iron block and move it, and she's just got this big old smile on her face. It's like, that's my girl, that's our Chelsea.
Yep. So, she's amazing. Yeah,
it is. So, well, that'll be cool. At least we'll get to hook up at C2C.
Hopefully my team will be able to fly up, and if not, I hope someone that's listening would take an Ecuadorian on their team, because I really want to do that one. That's probably one of my favorite races too. I mean, so much fun, and I love the C2C race. It's also been one of the races that I've been the coldest in. There was one particular year that, you never think of Florida as being cold, but we were freezing our ass off there, when we were paddling, and then after the paddle, it was freezing.
Yeah. Somebody posted a picture of me. This has not been very long ago, and somebody said, what are you wearing? And I literally, I had couple of tech shirts and some fleece and a puffy and then a down puffy over that. And they're like, it's like, well, I'd been up all night, running around. it gets cold when you get tired. So, yeah, it can get cold there.
Yeah, it gets really cold. I remember Jason and Dan telling me, stay away from the fire. Stay away from
the fire. Never go to the fire.
Never go to the fire. And stupid me, I went to the fire and
yep. That should be number one rule of adventure racing. Never go to the fire. So, cool. Well, I think you have the honor of being the last episode of 2020. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm guessing a lot of people will listen because, you know, people will be taking time off. And, you know, as I usually do, I listen to you on my runs or bikes or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, hoping that next year is a more adventurous year for everyone. I would really encourage people from here, you know, take a look at Guayasinchi next year. It's an amazing race. And from what I hear, next year's course, which is going to be this year's course, is going to be even more incredible. You know, the organization down there is more than willing to help people out and get them, you know, to have a great experience. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the folks next year as well.
So cool. And all my New Jersey and Pennsylvania and East Coast peeps, there's a good teammate for you.
Thanks, Randy. Hoping I can hook up with someone here. Awesome.
All right. Well, I'm going to go see if the little girl wants to eat a little supper. And I think it's movie night here.
Oh, what are you watching?
I don't know. So we've been watching Bosch, that show on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, it's like a limited series. It's over now, so there's six years worth. So yeah, that's been our latest thing. So that's probably what we'll watch start again. So.
Nice. Yeah. So. I'm gonna probably go have some wine. My son just got here, who I haven't seen in a while, so. I'm trying to get him into adventure racing, but he used to be a really good mountain biker, but he broke his arm and then he started playing soccer. Now he plays soccer at college. I'm going to go hang around with him.
Yeah. Feed him enough wine till he says yes.
We're tequila people.
Oh, yeah. Feed him enough. It doesn't take much tequila, does it?
Hey, if I see you at T2C, once we finish, I will make you a tequila person, Randy. I promise you that.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, but I appreciate the thought. So, okay, well, go drink some tequila then.
All right, Randy. Thanks so much. Thanks. And hope we have a happy holidays. Good talking to you.
We will. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
All right. Thank you, man. Right, take care. Bye.
Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and homemade eggnog. Little sister brought her new boyfriend. He was a Mexican. We know what to think of him till he sang Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad. Brother Ken brought his kids with him, the three from his first wife, Lynn, and the two identical twins from his second wife, Mary Nell. Of course, he brought his new wife, Kay. It sucks all about. Chain spoken while the stereo plays. Noel, Noel, the first Noel. Thank you. off the turkey, turn the ball game on. Mix margaritas when the eggnog's gone. Send somebody to the quick pack store. We need some ice and an extension cord. A can of bean dip and some diet rides. A box of tampons, some more perlite. Hallelujah, everybody say cheese. Merry Christmas from the family. Fran and Rita drove from Harlingen. I can't remember how I'm kin to them. But when they tried to plug their motorhome in, they blew our Christmas lights. Cousin David knew just what went wrong, so we all waited out on our front lawn. He threw a breaker and the lights came on, and we sang Silent Night. Oh, man, that was really good. That's better. Called the turkey, turned the ball game on. Make Bloody Marys. Send somebody to the stop and go. We need some celery and a can of fake snow. A bag of lemons and some diet sprites. A box of tampons, some Salem lights. Hallelujah, everybody say cheese. Merry Christmas from the family. Police now.